Well, we're in our fourth lesson on the book of Proverbs, and let me ask you, did any of the Proverbs from last week stay with you this week? Well, the answer is yes or no, so you have an answer. And it can't be it's not going to be a wrong answer. Yeah, well, the idea is that Proverbs were meant to be pithy and memorable, at least the Proverbs proper, I keep calling them. And there are a lot of longer narrative positions. I said 9 chapters at the introduction of the value of wisdom as pictured in 2 women, right? That's not quite as pithy. I mean, you can remember it. It's certainly memorable. But the Proverbs themselves, there's little, usually 2 or maybe 4 line Proverbs, they stay with you. So do you don't remember any from last week? Okay, yeah, so if I say, what's a beautiful woman with no discretion like? A swine with a gold ring in its nose, yeah. If I said, let's see. Trying to think of a good question to ask that would make it. You see a man abusing an animal. What do you think? Yeah. But remember, a righteous man regards the life of his beast, but even the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Right? So you draw that out a lot of different ways, but I mean it's a way of diagnosing. Remember, you're looking for success in Proverbs. You know, you're looking for tools by which to administer, run things, conduct your life. And here you're saying, "Wow!" Say, you know, righteous people, they can even feel what their cattle feel. I think is how we talked about it. But a wicked person is just. Even if they appear to be merciful, they're actually, in fact, being cruel. Well, we started last week. Remember, we said there were 9 chapters of broad introduction to the book of Proverbs. That's close to a third of the book. And then we went into Solomon's Proverbs proper, is how I put it. Clearly, there's a change that happens, I think, in chapter 22, I think, is where you'll see it, where he begins to catalog the sayings of other persons, and then you have other contributions. You have Hezekiah in 25, you have Agur and Lemuel coming. So he said that Solomon was more than a creator of Proverbs. He was a collector of Proverbs, and wisdom is vindicated by all her children. We said that when we took Solomon's Proverbs from those middle chapters, Solomon's Proverbs proper, if I can say that 6 times fast, we said that the first part of them tended to be Proverbs that were antithetical. And what we said is there's a lot of what's the big word was parallelism in Hebrew poetry type things, and this is poetry type literature, where you'd have A and B, and so you'd make the statement in A, and then you'd have kind of not B, you know, whatever it is. That's an antithesis. We said it was an antithetical proverb. It tended to whatever was said in the first, the opposite was said in the second. A righteous man regards the life of his beast; even the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. You see, one's positive, one's negative. There's kind of a rising and falling inflection. Remember, I said when you read these, let's get that sense of punchline in there verbally. You know, one's going up. You know, the righteous man regards the life of his beast, but, you know, it plunges to the basement. There's a circumflex there that happens. Well, we said that was the ones we looked at last week. The ones we'll look at this week have tended to be, these were called antithetical. I'm getting professorial, I'm sorry. But these tended to be, the next ones we're looking at today tend to be synthetic. In other words, what's in A is going to somehow or other be restated in B or elaborated on. There may even be a C and a D in there. It might turn into a 4-line thing, but things are going to join together and not be pulled apart. They won't be antithetical. They'll be synthetic. They'll draw each other in. So we've got now the second half of Solomon's Proverbs to look at. And remember, that's a generalization. I mean, we'll find some that are antithetical, even in it. We said, and that brings up our other point, which is that Proverbs proper don't seem to have any kind of overall organization. I mean, they would appear to be jumping all over the place. Now, in fact, you'll find that there are reoccurring themes. There are themes that you can draw out of there, and some of them are grouped. But generally speaking, they're not grouped real tightly. You'll find that there are many themes that come up and keep coming up in the Proverbs, but they might be divided by Proverbs about something completely different. You may see Proverbs about poverty. You'll see a lot of those. You'll see Proverbs about humility, about conflict, about drunkenness. And remember, we're trying to give you a course of wisdom that you can succeed, have a successful life in the Lord. And the great distinguishing mark of the Proverbs of the Bible, as opposed to some of those, is it's not just about this earth, and God's a player, and these, you know, in a sense, become definitionally righteous. This is how to be a righteous person. Okay, well, I picked out, I don't know how well this is going to work, but I picked four. I thought, but there are lots of themes. You could go through the second half of these things from chapter, I'm in 16 through 22, 16, which is where the another set of Proverbs begins that aren't Solomon's proper. Right? I thought, well, I've got all these themes. Let's pick four that seem to keep coming at you in here. And I picked, one of them seemed to be all about planning. That was the best term I could come with. So how do you set your course? I mean, how do you make your plans? The next one, interestingly enough, was wives or women. So you don't ever get too far from that in Proverbs, do you? I saw another one that seems coming this great, which is laziness. You know that cool word, sloth. You know, sloth. It was, I mean, we're not talking just lazy, because I mean, anybody can be lazy on an afternoon. You know, we're talking kind of like as a philosophy of life, laziness. Wally in the Dilbert cartoons. You know what I'm referring to? Did you read Dilbert? Wally's wonderful. I had a coworker once who really, really consciously adopted Wally's philosophy. He really did. He just felt like it was his job to work as little as possible at the Mobile Public Library. He's a good friend of mine. He's hysterical, though, but he had various schemes that were wonderful. He said, do you know that you could walk around this floor, if you put a manila envelope under your arm, you can walk around this room like 10 times. Nobody will stop you and ask you what you're doing. So you just pick it, say, it's time for a foy envelope. You like put a manila envelope or a folder, and you just walk around. Everybody always assumed he was doing something important. Eli told me this at Walmart. He worked 1 year at Walmart as like a lowly cashier, kind of a flunky, but then he got to wear a lab coat. He got like a white coat and a clipboard. I mean, his job was really insignificant. He was like counting hot dogs and stuff. You'd come out and like figure out how many, you know, sausages you had still on the shelf and stuff like that. He said, it's hysterical the questions people will ask you if they see you wearing a lab coat and carrying a clipboard. You know, he could have run the place. I mean, people assume you know everything when you do that. He said, mostly he was just hanging around, because there really wasn't that much to do with this job. So laziness was a fascinating one. And then a big one, which convicts me all the time, speech. And it wasn't just speech of sort of clean up your act, but what kind of speech succeeds and gets you where you want to go? Now, like I said, I don't know how well this is going to work, but get your Bible open to Proverbs. And as I said, we'll be starting in chapter 16, so we've got a little bit of a limitation here. Now, I have no idea how much conversation this will generate. I hope it generates a lot. But let's take a vote. Which one do you want to charge through first? Because we're going to draw Proverbs out of six chapters that are related to this theme. So we're going to have to read a lot of them. So which one is the most inherently fascinating to you? Laziness. What's that? Planning. See, this is why it never works to be, because I just think this is just endlessly fascinating. But I think it would generate a great conversation too. So what do you want to do first? Laziness? We'll do laziness. Look, I'm going to try to work it back here. What I want you to do is we'll all read them, but I'll put some down here that we can look at. 18:9, 19:15. These are the verses, and 19:24, and 20:4, and 20:13, and 21:25, and 22:13. And I can be really dyslexic, as you know, when I'm putting down numbers, so this might be disastrous. But what I'd like to do is let's just read them all and then see what happens. So remember, read a proverb with some drama. Remember that. Deliver the punchline when you get to it. It's one thing, but there's a capstone on it. So let's charge down through the laziness ones, and you can do it. So I'll just point to one, and then somebody take off on it. Okay. 18:9.
He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer.
Yeah, very good. He who is sloth is a brother to those or a great destroyer. 19:15.
Laziness lulls people into a deep sleep. A slacker will have nothing to eat.
Oh, that's wonderful translation. What is that?
The voice.
Okay, great. 19:24.
The sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth.
Okay. 24. Very good. 20:13. Very good. 21:25. 22:13. Okay. Very good. Now, think about this. Your instruction of you'd probably be young men, and you'd have a group, and you'd be taking it. Say, we've got a lot of proverbs here, and what I want to say at the end is, and this equals what? Now that would be the conclusion. If you added all this up, if there's a column for addition, what do we have down here at the bottom? But just reflect on some of those. Now, which ones did you like the most? Which one was that? How did it describe it?
The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, he will not even bring it back to his mouth.
That's wonderful, isn't it? Is it true? Nah, it's not really true. It's a joke, right? That guy's so lazy. How lazy is he? He puts a spoon in the cereal bowl, he won't even lift it back to his mouth. You know, it's a joke, right? Of course it's wonderful. I love the ones with sluggards in them. There's another sluggard one. Which one was it? Well, yeah, that's what Kelvin just read last. What is that one about? That's right. There's a lion in the streets. Now the question is, how would that apply to you? Yeah, you do. But it also tells you that if you're a young person sitting there thinking, oh man, there's always danger. What am I saying? Am I saying that there's real danger that I will prudently try to avoid, which Proverbs will tell you all the time to do, we'll see in planning, or am I simply being lazy? And so you're saying that every person is trying to overcome the inner sluggard. He's in every one of us. That person who will reach their hand in the bowl and not bring it to their mouths. What else did you remember from the images of laziness? Is that it? Those are the memorable ones? Yeah, exactly. The sense of surprise there is like, don't be surprised. So you're also saying to me, so if you go out and your fields aren't full of food, what did you do? You know, I mean, I didn't do anything. There could be a connection between not doing anything and not arriving at anything. Okay, so if we add it all up, what are we saying at the end of the day on the sluggard, on the slothful? Is it just a nag?
It's a warning that it's self-destructive.
There's self-destruction in it. Very good. What else? At the end of the day, I think it's more than a nag. It's more than just saying, okay, get up and get moving. I mean, there's some of that in it, of course, but I mean, that's just a nag. But this is about a successful course in life. So what are we saying here? What's Goldie? What's that?
Don't be lazy.
Don't be lazy, yeah. Well, I think when we look at were you going to say something, Vicki? I'm sorry. Yeah, I think the choice and motive question is bigger than the nag question. Because anybody can tell you, get up and get moving. That's really hard to do sometimes, actually. I mean, you know, if you're kind of out of get up and go. But I think motive and choice are very much a part of it. And humor is a big part of it, too. Anybody else finding anything else down here at the end of the day when we draw it and add them all together? Yeah. I think big, though. I mean, is it just sleep? Or is it metaphoric sleep? Isn't it the asleep at the switch kind of thing? I mean, it's not just like, I mean, there is that person, I think, who can sleep long hours, but I don't think we're talking just about staying in bed here. I mean, I think we're speaking of sleep in a broader and more poetic way, right? And it's just easy to fade out of the discussion, right? Not go there. Okay, well, what are we going to pick next? Look, we can't take a vote, so it's probably the person who's loud. The squeaky wheel will get the grease. That's in the Bible, too.
Wives.
Somebody said wives? Okay, mark that man. It's a shorter list, but this is where we'll go. 18:22, 19:13 through 14, 21:9, 21:19, and 22:14. Okay, so once again, we'll do the same, we'll give it the same treatment here. 18:22. Oh, very good. 19, 13, and 14.
Foolish children bring misery to their fathers, and the wife's bickering is a constant dripping as from a leaking roof. Houses and riches may be inherited from parents, but a sensible wife is a gift from the eternal.
What was the metaphor on the wife, the bad wife?
Dripping as from a leaky roof.
Dripping as from a leaky roof. What is that translation again? The boys, I don't know it. All right, 21:9. All right, 21:19. Okay, 22:14. Did we skip it, or did I get one wrong? Yeah, 22:14.
The mouth of an immoral woman is a deep pit. He who is abhorred by the Lord is
okay. Okay. All right, now which ones are memorable? Well, okay, but what image stuck in your mind here?
Yeah.
How does that read in other translations? The you're just dripping like a... Is that, that's 1913 and 14? What's that?
Constant
dripping. I think like King James is like a like constant dripping on a wet day or something like that. Is the constant dripping of a leaky roof. Everybody's got the roof in there? That startled me because I don't think that's like kind of in the Hebrew, but maybe I'm wrong. That's 21:9, right? 21. Whoever shuts his ears, no. 19:13. I want to read. I have New King James here. The contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. Got a footnote. Irritation, actually, is what it says. Okay, so we've got the dripping one. What else do we have? What other image stayed with you? Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Rather to live in the corner of the roof than in the house with the, how did it go, Tricia? Contentious one? Brawling woman? What? Quarrelsome wife. Okay. Well, what, I mean, we see there's both negative and positive there. I mean, we say the very first one was in a very positive image, right? And then others say like a prudent wife. Now, remember who your audience is. And we said that these were written for the young courtiers. We said already, you know, to dodge the beautiful women without manners, to dodge the seductress. We've had the last one, of course, is that an immoral woman's, you know, their voice is one that's going to lead you into a deep pit. The mouth of an immoral woman is a deep pit, flattering or seductive as it may be. But at the end of the day, once again, what do we have down here when we've added it all up? Choices. What's that? Choosing well. What happens if you choose poorly, you choose rashly, and where do you end up? As I said, bottom of pit or under the roof that's leaking or up in the corner of the roof while it's raining. You know, in any event, the picture is not pretty, right? I mean, it's going to be a miserable life. How do you women respond to this? No. It's the word of God. There's no corresponding your husband's a jerk kind of set here. But in reality, there's a whole list of proverbs you could tell, right, about, you know, boy men, you know, and what they're like.
I just that women are not.
It very much says a great wife is from the Lord, and discretion and these things are very valuable. We'll see other proverbs too. I mean, that's not an extensive list, but it's the list that's right there in Proverbs. But does it offend any of the women here? I'm just curious. I mean, you could say that, and you wouldn't be thrown out the doors. You've never been a constant dripping. You've never been a constant dripping. I mean, what's
that? I'll have to remember that for a Valentine card.
The constant dripping.
Betty Jo, you've never been a constant dripping.
Sort of a negative appraisal. There's a rock album put out by T-Bone Burnett. I remember it was what, Mars is looking for women, why don't you apply? And it quoted that proverb in the title. Clearly there would be a corresponding list of negative traits for men that would apply to women. I'd say consider the audience here. It was the young courtiers of Israel saying, do not choose wrong here. Now, I think a woman reads that and from our perspective, well, what? I mean, I could be playing those negative roles, but I could also, it's what Phyllis was saying, there's an affirmative side to this. You are not playing alone if you are a male. I mean, you are in a partnership, and that partnership can bless you or curse you, and pay attention to that. So the one thing it does exclude is sort of the wife as the non-entity, the non-player. I mean, it's saying it's a play for good or bad. Are you ameliorated at all, or are you just... Okay. I'm fine. What's wrong? Nothing. Okay. We all know that one. Okay. What do you want to do next? Planning or speech? Looks like we'll probably get through them all, so. Speech. Okay, let's do speech. You know, surprisingly, when you look at the list of these, I don't know that you can say in order of importance based on the number of references to them, or maybe just, you know, how weak are we in areas, which one gets the long list? Well, we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I found. For women, I found 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. For sloths, speech, it gets a little bit thick, actually, when I think it seems to me. 16:13, 16:21, 16:23 through 24. 27 through 28, 17:7, 17:27 through 28, 18:4, 18:6 through 8, 18:20 through 21, 19:1, and 21:23. So you say, well, maybe speech is a bigger problem. Well, you think about it, that's true. So I'll give them to you again. Let's read them. Remember to give us a punchline if there's one in there. So, on speech, 16:13.
Kings take pleasure in honest lips. They value a man who speaks the truth.
Okay, that's a classic synthetic proverb, right? I mean, it just doesn't just right there. B just complements A. 16:21. Very good. 16:23 and 24. Very good. All right. Well, once again, I'm out of a line down here. You say, add it all up, and what do you get? What do you walk away from this with?
21:23.
You can keep yourself out of it. I don't know if you ever heard it, but I heard it a lot growing up. That mouth of yours is going to get you in big trouble. They were right. It did, on numerous occasions. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Yeah, the speech isn't apart from character. Speech is a reflection of character. Someone else? When to speak and not to speak. Is that easy? If you were a courtier, I mean, and, you know, if you were in administration, that's a really difficult thing. When not speaking could be an incredible default of responsibility and a loss of opportunity. I see it a lot, but speaking when you ought to be silent is really foolish. I mean, it can be. Well, do any of the proverbs stick out to you? Do you remember any of them now? No, you don't. Some of those rise to the top, right? I mean, they're all memorable, but which one do you remember now because of its imagery or because of its quality, Kate? I mean, is there one that just kind of... Yeah, that's the one, that's the conclusion verse that Larissa, you'd be on that. Yeah, stay out of trouble.
Yeah. It's the one about the sweetness of...
I think that one really matters to me a lot, too. I think, well, if you have something to teach and you want to get it across, you can't be indifferent to how you say it, right? I mean, you want to say it sweetly. Or you're turning it the other way from the other perspective. I'm saying...
I forget which one it is. I thought it was some... I don't know which one it is.
It's not staying with me, the number. Yeah, 16. The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb. Sweetness is... No, that's not the one. Yeah, and the sweetness of lips increases learning. So I reversed what you were saying, Phyllis. How were you saying it?
I
Oh.
But now in my Bible, where I'm seeing it, it looks like how you were taking it, so I don't know.
But I wouldn't see.
I just know good things can, you know, go from a teacher to a student, it's a circle, or.
Oh, it is. There's nothing more difficult to manage than a class that won't feed back to you verbally. I mean, you can stand in front of them and lecture, and you know it just doesn't work. You know, but if they open that up and are clearly receptive, it brings out the best in me as a teacher all the time. I think one of the images that really gets me is the honeycomb one. I don't know why that one just stays with me. It was just it just seems like a wonderful image, and that's just further down there. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones, that they're healing and wonderful words. Anything else stand out? Yeah, speech can be really destructive. Anyone else remember? I have one more I just enjoy. Yeah, and that's the one I'm thinking of too, and I say I just delight in it. I mean, say like even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. Once again, it's a joke. I mean, I think, you know, I say, look, do I need to make my case anymore? Say, you know, why open your, you know, there's something we say in English like about removing all doubt as to whether you're stupid. You know, don't open your mouth, it will remove all doubt that you're stupid. How's that go? There's like some catchword we use like that. Oh, and then opening your mouth and removing all doubt. Yeah, people might think you're stupid, but you could open your mouth and, yeah, something like that haunts me. Oh, it's just. That was the one you read. Was it mouth? How did that go again? And then it's like he's begging for a feeding, or. Beating. It's like the knuckle sandwich. You know, it's amazing. they opened their mouth, that fight broke out. I think what Vicki said is, you know, from a pastoral standpoint, I am Christians can be incredibly prissy about speech, you know, about profanity and things like that. But I thought, people being so righteous are actually more destructive in their speech. I mean, that's what the Bible's concerned about. You know, not prissiness in language, but that the Christian mouth should be a mouth that is constructive and building. Now, I'm not advocating profanity, but I'm saying you can't pick up the Bible and say there's a list of forbidden words in here. Yet that's as far as sometimes Christian instruction on speech goes. I'm thinking, not in Solomon's court it wasn't. I mean, it was more what kind of things are coming out of your mouth, what's it coming from inside you, and is it constructive or destructive in its context? How I wish Christians would spend more time on that and less time on the prissy stuff, but go ahead and get mad at me if you want, but that's my pastoral opinion on that one. Okay, let's jump to planning. It's another one. Notice how much more there is in some of these. I better start 16, 1 through 4, 16, 9. 16, 17, and 18, 16, 25, 16, 33, 20, 18, 21, 5, 21, 31, 22, 3 through 5, and 22, 8. Okay, once again, that's just, I know it's calling on you a lot to read, but 16, 1 through 4 is a lot in that one.
Preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. The Lord has made all for himself, yes, even the wicked, for the day of doom.
Okay, remember, I'm putting this under planning. Just think about that. 16:9.
In his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps.
Okay, great. 17 through 18. Yeah, no, we all know that one, right? Although we shorten it. Pride goeth before a fall, we always say, right? But pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. 16:25. Great. 16:33. Very good. Lots. If you're around the Amish world at all, in some of the conservative Mennonite world, you know lots are a big part of life. 20:18.
Plans are established by counsel, by wise counsel which.
Read the second part of that again, David. By a wise counsel, wage war. And that was 20:18, right? 21:5.
A well thought out plan will work to your advantage, but hasty actions will cost you dearly.
21:31. All right, 22:3-5. Very good. Okay, so we get plan. I put all those under planning. I mean, you're trying to create a course of action. Remember, again, your audience. I was looking around. I know some of you don't bring Bibles, and I think you're listening. I think, yeah, that's the way this was done, verbally. I mean, that's why they're pithy. That's why the images are meant to stay. I mean, in some ways, you think you should just read one and have everybody just look and think about that one for a moment. Okay, at the end of the day in planning, when we add the column up, what do we get? Well, I think we're kind of out of time here. There's several themes emerge there. I mean, A, that the horse is prepared for the day of the battle, but victory comes from the Lord. Once again, in these Proverbs, God is a player in the world. It does, though, throw the ball into the court of human responsibility. It's not saying God's going to, you know, give you a daily planner. He's saying, you know, your plans are yours to develop, but God can guide your steps. I mean, so you don't demote yourself as a human being. God's given you a life to live. He's not going to tell you what to do, where to go, or maybe even what to dream about or be ambitious about. But recognize that it's only when God brings himself to your plans that you expect success in any level. And the other issue was that he had a lot in there about, once again, motive. Right? I mean, there were several of them said something like, there are ways that seem right that are just dead wrong. And so you consider your audience again, saying, yeah, it can feel right. But you must always, in a sense, you know, be ready to analyze all your plans and beliefs and say, there are things we can feel that, oh, that feels right. And it's just flat out wrong, according to the Proverbs. I think it's counseling always being open to sort of a self-analysis about the plans you create. And it helps you also to understand that when you're dealing with other people, sincerity is no test. I mean, one of the most unsettling things about fanatics and unbalanced people and destructive people is sometimes they're 100% sincere in what they believe. Yeah, you keep going right into your own, walk right into the jaws of the disaster. I always thought that it would be so nice to be ahead of it, to see danger coming and get out of the way, rather than be caught flat-footed, you know, when it comes about. Well, God bless you. We're still working on Proverbs. That's number 4. We're halfway through the book of Proverbs. Why don't I dismiss you with a prayer and a prayer for lunch, and then we'll do the next stuff here. So why don't you stand? Heavenly Father, we know your counsel, your wisdom is for us, and it'll lead us to happiness, and if not success in any material terms, certainly peace, certainly joy, and we'll be constructive and positive players for all the people we encounter. Thank you for this class, and we ask your blessing on our meal and our fellowship, and pray that it would we would be fed physically, but above all else, spiritually. In Christ's name, amen.